Shavuot Tov, a gute Woch. Tonight we invite the Holy of the Holy, the great Tzaddik, Reb Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, to come join us, the Holy Bnei Yisachar, one of the great Hasidic Rabbeim, one who has made one of the greatest contributions to the Hasidic library. In other words, there were many, many great Hasidic Rabbeim, and who had an impact and purified the world for Mashiach and brought a lot of light to the world and elevated souls. Not everybody has Torah written from them. Not everybody wrote Torah. Rabbi Tzvi Elimelech of Dinov, the great, we're going to refer to him as the Bnei Yisachar all night, has contributed probably from the top 10 in terms of how many books they've written in Hasidus. Not just in Hasidus, he was a great, great goyin and tzaddik and in all aspects of Torah. And therefore his writings are very, 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 are studied very much in the world of Hasidus. One of the greatest of his writings, the Bnei Yisachar, is mamish, a classic of classics. It's written on all the Yomim Tovim of the year. And so tonight, his Yahrzeit is coming up this week. The 18th of Tevis is going to be his holy Yahrzeit. And Lekavod his Yahrzeit, he writes that whoever passes away in Chodesh Tevis becomes immediately attached to the Shechina. He says, the Shechina is called, I don't know why, Iti Aleph Tes, Aleph Tuf Yud, Aleph Tes Yud. No, Aleph Tuf Yud, Aleph Tuf Yud. And it's a gematria of Tevis. So he says, anybody that passes away on Tevis, we know the Alter Rebbe, Rav Shneur Zalman of Liadi, passed away on Tevis. Rav Nosson of Breslov, Tevis. Some great, great giants passed away on Tevis. So the Bnei Yisachar is one of the great tzaddikim, passed away on Chodesh Tevis. So tonight we invite the Bnei Yisachar here, and I'm sure his holy presence is here with us. So we will, Be'ezus Hashem, be blessed with much bracha and light, illumination, and all that we need. We'll say a short story before we begin the evening of singing and all that. Hopefully very soon the Malava Malka, the washing material will come. And meanwhile, here's a special story. So there was once a Yid who came to the great and saintly Bnei Yisachar, and he was crying. He said, Rebbe, I need help. Rebbe, I need help. I am, this person had been getting his livelihood from an inn. He's been getting his livelihood from an inn. He was, an inn that he had. And he would, they had there a little restaurant, and they had a bar, and so on and so forth. For many years, it was operating. He got all his livelihood from the inn, and also his father. This inn belonged to his father. And now the squire, the parrots who owned the place, wanted to kick him out. Told him he's got to go, gave him a limit, told him that he's kicking him out of there and he's going to shut down the place, or he's going to sell it and have someone else take over. So he said, Rebbe, please, this is my entire livelihood. So the Bnei Yisachar, and he told him which place he was coming from. Bnei Yisachar said, He said, so that place. And he started describing to him exactly what the inn looks like. The outside porch when you come up, and the inside as soon as you walk in, what is the hall, where is the fireplace, and what are the tables, and the whole situation, and the stairs that are towards the back, and so on and so forth. Mamashi's giving him a description of the colors of the place, the whole thing. And the guy is like totally blown away. How in the world does the Rebbe know what his inn looks like? And then the Bnei Yisachar says, and tell me, the well that's outside, is it still giving sweet water? Is the water still good? He says, Rebbe, Baruch Hashem, the waters are still really good. So the Bnei Yisachar says, okay, then you have nothing to worry about. Everything will be really good. You're going to be at the inn. The place is there for you. You have Zorg Zachnesh, nothing to worry. And then the Bnei Yisachar explained. He said, when I used to travel to my Rebbe, the great Chayza from Lublin, the seer from Lublin. In the early years, I would travel on foot, and at times, I didn't have any provisions. I had no way to take care of, you know, my hunger. And I had made a firm resolve that I would never ask anybody for help. A lot of tzaddikim had that. They would not ask anybody for help. They relied only on the Eibishter. They would not ask. And here I am already walking for 3 days without a morsel of food, and I'm ready to die. I mamish feel my last koiches are leaving me. And I come to this inn. And I came into the inn, and the man that was in charge was this person's father, was busy serving. You know, there were a lot of, it was a busy time, a lot of people there at the bar, people were ordering drinks, and he was kind of busy, he didn't notice me. And okay, he was serving, and then I saw that no one was paying attention to me. So I, after a while, I left. When he saw, but he noticed that I left, he dropped everything that he was doing, came running after. He said, Rabbi, don't go, stay over here. Shavuot Tov. He said, don't leave me. He said, come. He says, come, I'm going to, and when he got close to him, he saw that this poor fellow, he noticed me, he saw my face must have been so pale. He noticed that I look like I'm going to, you know, I haven't eaten for days. He felt really bad. He said, I'm so sorry that I didn't turn my attention to you immediately. He immediately ran, he grabbed him, you know, a bowl of potatoes, and he gave him something to eat and whatever. And then he said, you got to come inside, come back. I'll take care of you. We'll get you some, you know. So the holy B'nai Yisachar returned, went back into the house. Again, this is when he's a young man. And the man, mamash, prepared for him an entire feast. He really served him really well. And after he finished eating, he said, I'm very thirsty. Can I get something? Can I get some water? That's what he asked. He said, can I get some water? I'm very thirsty. So the man sent his, you know, the waitress that was working over there. There was a waitress. He said, go get the rabbi some water. Meanwhile, it was taking like 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and she's not coming back. And the B'nai Yisachar was very thirsty. So he said, he asked, like, what's taking so long for the water? So they said, because the well, we ran out of water, we have to go get water from the well, and the well is at a distance. So the Rebbe said, but I don't understand. Outside, I see there is a well. Right outside in front of the, right in front of the, you know, in front of the inn, there's a well over there. We'll just get water from there. They said, no, that water has been really contaminated and bad for a long time. We don't drink from that well. It's not good. Water is terrible. He said, listen, I'm so thirsty. I feel like I'm, you know, go get me the water from over here. So the guy came and said, okay, fine. He wants the water. He told him, I'm telling you, Rabbi, it's not good. But the Rabbi, I said, he wants the water. So he gives him water and he drinks. He says, what are we talking about? It's delicious water. The water is sweet. And he says, taste it. So he gave it to the innkeeper. The guy tastes the water and he says, the water is really good. So now he says to the son of this fellow, he says, are the waters of the well still sweet? Like my Moshe Rabbeinu, he sweetened the water. He says, are the waters still sweet? He says, if the waters are still sweet, he says, these waters are not for the parrots. These waters are for you and your family and so on and so forth. Go back home and everything will be okay. So if anybody needs any water in their life that needs to be sweetened, may we have all of our waters sweet and delicious, refreshing and life-giving. L'chaim, l'chaim, l'bracha. We are, the year was 1783. In a small little town, the name of the town, let me give you the name of the town. Yavarnik, this is a town in Galicia. Lived a very, very special yid. His name was Reb Pesach Langzam. He was a grandson of the great saintly tzaddik and Mekubal who died al Kiddush Hashem, Reb Shamshin of Astropoli. And his wonderful wife and big tzaddikis, Rachel Mina, whose mother's name was Elke, Rachel Mina Bas Elke. Elke was the sister of the great saintly tzaddikim, Reb the Holy Reb Melach of Luzensk, and the Rebbe Reb Zisha, Rebbe Reb Zusha. The two brothers, Reb Lamelech and Reb Zusha, had a sister, and her name was Elke. She had a daughter, Rachel Mina, who married this Reb Pesach. And this Reb Pesach Langsam, they tried to have children, and every time his wife, Rachel Minna, became pregnant, she ended up losing the child. She ended up miscarrying again and again and again, and she didn't make it, you know, wasn't zoicha to have a baby, a healthy child. When finally, after much, much frustrations, she can't bear the pain anymore, and this time she was pregnant, she went to her saintly uncle, the great tzaddik, who was helping the entire world, Rebbe Lemelech of Lizensk. She came to him and she said, "My holy uncle, please help me out. I need to have a bracha for a healthy child." Rebbe Lemelech said, "Nothing to worry, you're going to be fine. Your child that's going to be born is going to be gesund and stark. He's going to be a healthy baby boy. And please name him Elimelech." So when she heard that, she got a little scared, because in the Ashkenazic world, you don't name someone after someone who's alive. And here Rebbe Elimelech asked that this baby be named Melech, the same like Rebbe Elimelech. So she went home, and Baruch Hashem, the pregnancy was well, and she gave birth to a healthy little baby. And when it came time to the Bris Mila, she was scared. So she named, but she had instructions to name him Elimelech, and her uncle was still alive. So she decided to add a name, and she called him Herr Shmeilech. She called him Tzvi Elimelech. She added the name Tzvi to Elimelech. When Rebbe Elimelech heard the name of his nephew, he said, "Ahersh is nisht kamaylech, but he's still going to grow up to be a great man." That's what he said. He said, a tzvi, a deer, is not a melech, is not a king. A tzvi is a deer. He said, a tzvi is not the king. A lion is the king. So he said, tzvi is not a melech. But according to some, he said, he'll be half of me. He won't be me, but he'll be half of me. Anyways, this was the story of the birth of the great and saintly tzaddik. Anyways, when this great holy neshama came to the world, the forces of darkness were not happy about it. And I'll tell you a stunning story, which is hard to believe, but it's a true story. It's a very dramatic story, so those of you who are scared of a little drama, but you'll be okay. It's a great story. The chitzayinim, the forces of unholiness, did not like that this great neshama is coming into the world, and they wanted to do something to stop it. So even before his bris mila, the night, I think it was the night after he was born, the baby woke up to nurse. His saintly mother, Rachel Minna, picked up the little baby, and she dropped the baby immediately, and she said, "This is not my child. This is not my baby. Where is my child?" Meanwhile, the baby is crying because the baby wants to nurse. And the mother is insisting, "This is not my baby. Someone switched my child." She was crying, and the baby was crying, and it was a big problem. The people woke up in the house, and people were coming and saying, you know, they tried to convince the mother, "No, of course, this is your baby. This is your baby. This is your baby. The door was locked. No one can come in here. No one switched your child." And she said, "I am not nursing this child. This is not my child." Father at Pesach came. The father at Pesach came. Zalmi, this story is for you. Pay a lot of attention. His father at Pesach came, and he started talking to his wife. He said, "This is our child." He thought his wife became loyalenu meshuga. Something happened in her head. A demon went into her head. She was possessed by something. He didn't know what to do, and she's insisting. She's crying and she's screaming. She's not touching the baby. This is not her baby. Meanwhile, the baby's crying for food. This whole situation is very problematic. He saw that he's not going to get out of the situation. He went and he grabbed the horse and he went galloping to Lizensk. He came to his wife's uncle. His Rebbe, "Help my wife. She became crazy." He came into Rebbe Elimelech, and to his astonishment. Rabbi Elimelech said, she's right, it's not your baby. They switched the baby up. They switched the baby. He said, but whatever, what should I do? He said, run home immediately, grab the baby. Go into the forest next to your town. Put the baby on the ground. And he started saying to do something. He said, start hitting the baby. That's what he said. Until they give you back your child. That's what he did. Went home, took the child, took him to the forest. The middle of the night, you can imagine the whole scare over here. Put the baby down. And at Kigabi, started hitting the baby. The baby's crying. When suddenly an elderly, an old woman came out of the brush. And she said, stop! Give me back mine and I'll give you yours. And he took the baby, gave her the other one, took the baby, came running back home with the child. The Bnei Yisachar says, I remember the night that I spent in darkness. Later the aunt, the mother, the niece, brought this little baby to the Melech, and the Melech would play with this child. He held him on his lap, and the Bnei Yisachar said, he remembered, I'm talking about, he's literally a month or two old, a little baby. He remembers being held by Rabbi Elimelech, and he would tell even what he looked like, certain things and features about the saintly tzaddik, the holy Rabbi Elimelech. It became, from that time and on, this is what they say, it became very strong minhag by Yidden in Galicia, in Poland, everywhere, to make sure to put the shir hamalois, what we put by little babies, you know, the little segulas. You want to make sure that you keep the right one over there. But this was the this was the Maisa, where they had the Shir HaMalos by the Bnei Yisachar. L'chaim. L'chaim ul'bracha, everyone. Rav Pesach, the father of the great Bnei Yisachar, his father was, worked to earn a living. He had various different things that he did. For a while, he was manufacturing different... he had a brewery making spirits and so. Other times, yeah, it's a chassidish, that should be a chassidish job. He was involved in other things, and then at a certain time when he didn't find any other means, he went out to see if he can find any work possible. So happened that he found a job as being a malamed, being a teacher for a villager, a person who lived in a village. The guy owned an inn, like a lot of Jews got their parnassah, moving these little motels in these various different villages. These people need to have a rebbe for their children. They needed to have a malamed for their children. So they would hire a rebbe, and the rebbe would teach all the kids. First, he would spend a little bit of time with the younger kid teaching him Aleph Beis. Then he would sit and teach the next boy, the Chumash, the older one, Mishnayos. And so he taught all the children. Usually, these Malamdim would stay in the villages for 5-6 months. They would be away from their families. They would come home for Pesach and for Rosh Hashanah. That's what usually or for Sukkot. They would come back home twice a year. And the way it would work is that the Malamid would be taken care of. The villager would take care of his food and lodging, take care of all his needs. And then he would give him a paycheck at the end, before he would go home. He would pay him for all 5 months that he worked for him, for the whole winter, let's say, that he worked for him. He would give him a paycheck. So happens that this Reb Pesach is working for this villager. And this villager was a very coarse person, and he was pretty much of an ignorant person in Amoritz, and he was not the best-hearted person. And any time poor people would come and ask for a donation, ask for a little bit of food, he would get very angry, and he would chase them away in wrath. And this Reb Pesach was a very good-hearted Yid. He couldn't stand the mistreatment of how this guy was treating all the poor people that would come. It bothered him. He didn't have any money to give them. He couldn't do anything. He felt helpless. So he came to his employer and he said to him, well, you know what? Let's make a deal like this. You have the check. You're holding on to my money. You haven't paid me. So you know what? In a few months, before I leave, you're going to have to pay me for all the work that I did the last few months. Why don't you give food for all these people that come for food and they're asking, you know, give them for a donation. Give them and let it be on my cheshbon, on my account. You'll deduct from what? From my paycheck. You'll deduct and then you'll, whatever. So he said, good, I'll do that. No, came Erev Pesach, you know, 2 weeks before. The guy's Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's time for him to come home. He worked there literally 5-6 months. He was away from his family. And he comes to the guy. And the guy takes out the book and he starts making a calculation with him. And he shows him every dollar that he gave, every lunch that he fed. He literally charged him full price, showed him what each sandwich that he served and so on. He gave the guy a Coca-Cola and everything that he did. He put it all on the cheshbon. And he said, based on this cheshbon, I don't owe you a dollar. Not only don't I owe you a dollar, you owe me. So he said, I want you to give me. Anyways, he took away from him his Shabbos clothing because he had nothing to give him. So now he's going back home without anything. The guy, after 6 months working, he's going back home, barely has just his weekday clothing with him, and so at least he doesn't have heavy baggage to take. He has nothing to take home with him. He's coming back, and fine. Comes back to the town. He doesn't have a heart. As he's coming back to his town, he's beginning to think, like, what is he going to say to his wife? He went away from the wife. She had to raise the kids alone. No one was there. He's not home. He's there for 6 months. And he's going to bring back a couple of dollars. She's waiting so that she can pay up the back bills that she borrowed just to take care of the family. And here, you know, there's nothing there. So he can't face his wife. So what does he do? He went to shul. So he goes to shul, sits down in shul, starts learning. Meanwhile, word got around town. People heard that the Pesach is back. So she hears that her husband is back. And he's in shul. So she sends her son, Hersh Melech, the little Tzvi Melech, to go call his father. So the boy comes to shul, and he says, Ta, oh, shine. The father sees him, happy, this and this. Now he has no bread, and now he has to come home. So he's walking with his little son, and they're walking to the house. And as they're walking, suddenly there is this affluent carriage, a coach, comes riding through the town. And in that poor town, you never saw such a, you know, this was like a Cadillac, you know, was driving through, and it's that. And there seems to be a Jew in the front, and so on and so forth. And it goes zooming past them. And as it passes through, a bag falls out, like a little sack, a little thing. And the Yid sees that it fell out. So this Reb Pesach picks it up. And he goes running after, and he's yelling, Reb Yid, stop, a peckle, something fell out. You dropped one of the, you know. And the guy's not stopping. And he's running and running and chasing and screaming and hollering, please stop, you lost something. And actually, he sped up, and he speeds in Gegangen. So now he's huffing and puffing, he comes back to his son, he's holding it, they open it up, and it's full of money, it's mamash rubles. And then he counts it, he sees exactly the amount of money that was his paycheck was supposed to be, the full amount, every dollar is there. Okay. So now he has money, comes home, he asks for Pesach. And it comes Pesach by night by the Seder. And it comes time to go open up the door. And little Hersh Melech, is the older boy in the house, is sent to go open the door for Eliyahu Hanavi. As he opens up the door, he yells, he says, Tate, cook, look, the Yid from the wagon. He's a little 5-year-old boy. He says, here he is, the Yid from the wagon that we just saw that dropped the money. And as that happened, suddenly Uparach LaYisha Emes, the man just disappeared. And that was it with the story. So the holy B'nai Yisachar got to see Eliyahu HaNavi already from a very young age. And later, at other times in his life, he had some other giluyim of some pretty awesome tzaddikim. Later, just we talk about Eliyahu HaNavi and the B'nai Yisachar, when he was, he became a rabbi, he was part of a dayan, he was a judge in the town of Dinev, with a great, the head of the rabbi there. At this time, he was like very young, he was like 16 years old. He joined to be part of the Beis Din. So the Reb Shua, the head of the Beis Din was Reb Shua. And this Reb Shua was a big tzaddik, and he used to be zeicher for Gilui Eliyahu. He used to see Eliyahu HaNavi quite often. At one time, Eliyahu HaNavi stopped appearing to him. And he was bothered by it, and he did whatever he can to kind of find out what's going on. And he found out that in the Beis Din, because someone insulted the Bnei Yisachar when he was there, and someone insulted him, and he didn't say anything. And he said that the Eliyahu HaNavi is upset because he did not defend the honor of Reb Hirsh Melech. So then he came to ask Mechila from him, to ask for forgiveness. And then Eliyahu HaNavi continued coming to him, but he, at that point, went to him and he said, please, he didn't want him to stay in town anymore because it was causing him problems. He wasn't going to risk it again. But he did tell, the Bnei Yisachar used to always joke, and he used to say, you see, I have smicha from Eliyahu HaNavi. Chaim. When this Hirsh Melech was a little boy of six years old, he was noticed when he was a very young child as a genius, an incredible memory. Everything he learned, he remembered. But he was also a very big masmid, loved learning and learning and learning. And he would strain himself so much when he learned. So it happened when he was 6 years old, he started having a little difficulties in seeing. They called a doctor, and the doctor said that he's losing his eyesight because of the immense strain that he's straining his eyes. So the doctor said that he should not be allowed to study anymore. Shouldn't be allowed to learn. So the father, they realized it was a real problem, so they had the parents to make sure that their son is not going to be exposed to any books. They're not going to give him any svarim. But no matter what they tried to stop him, he just couldn't hold himself back. This was just such a desire that was just... His desire for learning was unsatiable. So he would always find ways to find books and learn and learn and this. So the father had to get a shomer, literally, to get a guard to guard him and to take him out, you know, watch him during the day, different times, not to let him learn. But this little boy would wake up in the middle of the night, he'd run out of the house, and he would either learn and study by the moonlight, or he would go to find any home that he can see that there's a little light coming through from the window. This little kid would be running around the town looking for places, and he held a sefer, and he was learning. When they realized that too was not working, so they needed to come up with a better eitzah. What are they going to do? So the father went and he locked him up in the wood. There was a storage place where there was only wood. He wouldn't have any access to any book, but he was scared for his son's eyesight. So he locked him in the storage, the wood storage. So he shouldn't have any access to any books. Talking about a six-year-old boy. He was skimmeraging around, looking and looking and looking, and he found, Baruch Hashem, he found a Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur Machzer. So he sat and he studied the Machzer, until he knew the entire Machzer by heart. And all his life, the Bnei Yisachar was a big Baal Tefillah, and all his life, when he davened Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, he would close his eyes and say, all the piyutim, and you know that hour, the Chabad Machzer cuts out a lot, and the other one, they have much more. Like, you have long yotzeres and pieces, and he knew the entire thing, Azei Baal Peh, from when he was 6 years old, when he was learning. Anyways, he was got a little older, and he was time to get married. He was an Eloi Nifla. He was an incredible genius. And he married his wife's name. Let me tell you, the Rebbetzin. Her name was, hold on, let me find it over here. Hold it. Here we are. Oh, her name was Chana Mindel. She was the daughter of Reb Shmuel. It's an interesting name of a town. I don't know how to pronounce it, but something like Chuch. Anyway, this was the town. And good. The father-in-law, so he knew. He took a very special son-in-law. He took care of him. And then he was able to... I guess, I don't know what happened to his eyes. Somehow, the Eberster protected his eyes, and he didn't lose his eyesight. For the betterment of the entire world, that we have all the books now of the Bnei Yisachar and all the teachings of him. He was young, he stopped. He wasn't, the Shver realized that he's not eating any meat. The Shver realized that he's not eating meat. And no, but by the way, after he got married, a group of young people started, of the town, people started seeing that he's an extraordinary person, so they started becoming his followers. So he managed to get a whole group of followers that following him, and they saw him as a Moira Derech, even though he was very young, I think 16, 17, but they saw him as their Moira Derech, they followed him. His Shver realized, his father-in-law realized that he's not eating meat. So when he questioned him, why are you not eating meat? He said, "Es gefällt mich nicht der Scheichet. I'm not pleased with the Scheichet. Not happy with the Scheichet." Okay. So the Shver, the father-in-law, was very taken back, because the Scheichet was a very special person. He was known to be a Yeshayir Shemayim, a good man. Not only that, he was a big chassid of Remendel of Rimenov. He was a chassid. So when the Shver started pestering him, "This is a good person, he's a fine man," he said, "Mir gefällt nicht der Scheichet. I don't like the Scheichet." Anyways, so he said to his father-in-law, he said, "Listen here, if you want, you can bring me to a Din Torah with the Scheichet, and then over there I'll tell you the reason, I'll say the reason what I don't like about the Shechita." So the Shver went to the Scheichet, and what happened was, because he stopped eating the meat, many other people in the young chever that followed him also stopped eating the meat from the Shechet. So it was starting to become a little bit of a problem in the town that many people were not eating the meat of the Shechet. So he said, "If I come to Din Torah, over there I'll say." So the Shechet said, "I'm not going to Din Torah. Every younger man that's going to get a meshigas in his head that he doesn't eat my Shechet, I'm going to have to go to Din Torah with him. I'm not going." So the Shver told the Bnei Yisachar, you know, that he doesn't want to go. He says, "You know what, no problem." He goes to Remendel of Rimenov. He goes to the great saintly Remendel of Rimenov. "Next time he's by his Rebbe, I'm going to go there as well. Come with me, we'll go there as well. And to his Rebbe, Remendel, I'll tell him the reason." So happens, next time the Sheikhet went to his Rebbe, he also went to Shver. This Reb Shmuel took the Bnei Yisachar with him to Rimenov. Remendel asked him, "What's going on? Why are you not eating the meat from the Sheikhet?" So he started giving reasons. Remendel didn't like it. So then he whispered something into the ears of Remendel. Remendel said, "Ooh, der junge man hat jüngere Augen. This young man has younger eyes than me. He sees well. From that day and on, he started, this Reb Hirsch Melach started connecting himself to the great Tzaddikim. His first Rebbe that he had was this Remendel of Rimenov. He was a strong chassid of his. But after a while, he also went to the great tzaddik, the Choyze from Lublin. What happened? The story is as follows. Somebody in his town was dealing with oxen. He bought animals. He was an animal dealer. And this guy used to travel to Lublin. Because in Lublin there was a big fair. There was a market where you would be able to buy animals, sell animals, buy animals. Anyways, this Yid went to Lublin. Every time he would go to Lublin, he would go to the Chayza from Lublin to ask for a bracha. And the Chayza would always give him a bracha. Problem was, to go into a Rebbe, you need someone to write you a kvittel. And looks like the Chayza wasn't set up in a really good system where he had already a gabbai that was the kvittel writer. So this guy, whenever this merchant would come to the Chayza, in order to have, he didn't know how to write it, he would need someone to write it for him. So he'd always be running around Lublin looking for someone who can write him the kvittel. So one time he thought to himself, "Why do I need to do that? Why don't I go to the rabbi of my town and let him write for me?" So he came to the Bnei Yisachar and he asked him, "Write for me." So he wrote him a kvittel. When he comes into the Chayza and he gives him the kvittel, the Chayza says, "Who wrote this?" He wants to know who wrote this. He says, "Er schreibt good. He writes well, he writes nice." So he thought, he has a nice handwriting, So he said, "My Rebbele." He called him, "My Rebbele, my rabbi." So he says, "When you go home, please tell him that I want to see him." That's one story, because the story is told two ways. That's one gerusa in the story. Another way the story is told is that there was a yid who wanted children, and he came to the Bnei Yisrael to write him a kvittel that he was going to take to the choyzer. The Bnei Yisrael wasn't a rebbe at that time. He was a rabbi. He was a rav in the town. So he asked him to write him a kvittel that he's going to take to the choyzer for children. When he brought him the kvittel, the choyzer read, and the choyzer said, "You were helped already, as soon as the kvittel was written, you were already blessed. You have nothing to worry about. You're already blessed." And he said, "Please go home and tell the one who wrote the kvittel to you that I want to see him." So he was happy, because he felt, he always wanted, he says, "I always want to go see the choyzer from Lublin, the seer of Lublin, but problem is, he has a rebbe ready. He has a rebbe, Amendel of Rimanov. And because he has a rebbe, he can't go. He felt Now, by the way, this for the people that are here, we have to make a little hagdama. In those days, it was the custom for many people to travel to many rabbeim. And today's days, you also have lots of people who do that. Those who are, let's say, of Chabad connections are very, very exclusive in their rebbe. They go to one rebbe. Because in Chabad, the rebbe would introduce the concept of Nasi Hadoir. So that's why, you know, you stick to one rebbe, you have one mashpia, and zehu zeh. Breslov also has done the same thing. Because the Breslov, Reb Nachman, talks about Tzaddik Amiti. Why does Reb Nachman say Tzaddik Amiti? Because Reb Nachman keeps exclusivity, you know, you stay by me. There's other tzaddikim, fine. So you have different types of chassidim. There are chassidim that will nash a little bit here and nash a little there. In the Polish chassidim, particularly, I mean, mamish in Poland, the minig was, the way it was, people traveled to lots of rebbes. It wasn't considered a big taboo as a chassid if you went to learn or to hear or to inspire by someone else. But still, the Bnei Yisrael felt uncomfortable going to the choyzer from Lublin when his rebbe was, for now, that the choyzer himself was asking for him, he had no choice. When he came to the choyzer, became very makusha to the Chayza from Lublin. Chayza from Lublin asked him to daven shach, to daven psukah de zimra on Shabbos. When he daven psukah de zimra, the Chayza said, "Okay, now finish the entire shachas." He wanted him to go to the end because he realized his davening was very holy, and he connected it. But what's interesting story was a famous story that when the one time as he was traveling to Lublin, the Bnei Yisrael was on his way to Lublin. He decided he has a question to ask his rebbe. What was the question? His question was, how come he feels a very great burst of light every Hanukkah? Hanukkah is a very, very inspiring time by him. He feels unbelievable, elevated. He feels a lot of energy. He feels very close to the Eibishter on Hanukkah, more than any other time of the year. And he was wondering. He said, "I can't be related to the Hashmonaim, because the Hashmonaim, I can't be related to the Hashmonaim because the Hashmonaim were Kohanim and I'm not a Kohen." That was his question. I'm not a Kohen. So what's the secret of Hanukkah? When he came to the Choyzer, he didn't even have to ask the question. As soon as he came in, the Choyzer said, "The reason why you feel such light on Hanukkah, because," he says, "you come from Shevet Yisachar. That's your ancestry. And the Bnei Yisachar, they were part of the Sanhedrin. And even though there was already a Golos of Aseres HaShvatim, but there were some members of the Bnei Yisachar from the family, tribe of Yisachar that remained. And they were part of the Hashmonaim Beis Din that were Mesakin the Yom Tov of Hanukkah. And therefore, since this is your Sheirish HaNeshama, you come from them, that's the reason why you have such light in your Neshama on Hanukkah." So therefore, he named his Sefer Bnei Yisachar. By the way, just an interesting thing, the family name of the Bnei Yisachar family is called Shapiro. I told you his father's name was Reb Pesach Langzam. He changed his name from Langzam to Shapiro because when he was a bacher, they drafted him to the army. Families needed to give. Now, obviously, this was not in Russia where there was the Tsar's decree of the Konstantin, but it seems like in Poland as well, in Galicia, there were people that were taken and drafted and whatever. So
It was, and these guys usually were taken, and you didn't hear much back from them. Many of them got died, and many of them just got lost from Judaism. And it was a real, the family was in mourning, such a goyim, such a genius. Anyways, as they took him on the wagon, they would go to they would bring them from different places, and then they had them in a bigger wagon, and then they would take that wagon to a main central post, and from there they would take the kids off to the various different military posts where they would be. Anyways, as the wagon was traveling over a bridge, suddenly a part of the bridge suddenly gave, and the bridge broke under the weight of the wagon. The wagon collapsed into the river. Sadly, whoever was on the wagon, no one survived. Besides the Bnei Yisachar, as a boy, he was the only one who managed to somehow end up on top of a plank from the wagon. The wagon broke, and it was floating on the river, and he was saved. His grandson, Reb Tzvi Elimelech of Bluzhiv, known as the Tzvi Latzadik, whenever he would know where that place is, whenever he would see it, he would say a bracha, baruch she'asa neis to my Zayda on this place. At that time, when he escaped, he was afraid to keep his name, so he had to make a name change. So he changed his name to Shapiro. His great-grandson, the Minchas Alazar, writes that the reason why he chose the name Shapiro, he says, is because that family, he says, we know that there was Shapiro is a very known name amongst the Jewish people, but it comes from the Jews who lived in the city of Spire. Spire was one of the cities that was on the Rhine River. And during the Crusaders, they massacred Jews over there. Many Jews died al Kiddush Hashem. So the Minchas Alazar writes that all the Yidden that were killed al Kiddush Hashem, many Jews, they were all tzaddikim, big Talmid HaChachamim and tzaddikim. Those survived were only little children, little infants. Somehow they got communities took them in, different communities. And everybody wanted to do a shidduch with these children, because they said that these children have a real yichus. They were miyuchasim. They were considered real miyuchasim. And those were the people that were called Shapiro. That's where the Shapiro family. And he says the Bnei Yisachar, even though he didn't have that name, comes from that mishpacha of the people of Spire. And this is the mishpacha. So this is a very, very, very special thing. I heard an interesting thing. We talk about the Bnei Yisachar and the significance. I remember when I was a bacher, I was traveling, I was coming back to yeshiva. I was learning then, I think it was Lubotka and Mir, I don't know which part of my life it was, but I was on the plane. And I took with me a Bnei Yisachar. I was learning on the plane. Next to me was sitting a Chabad chassid. They got into conversation with me, and he saw that he thought he's meeting some Polish chassidish bacher. So he starts talking to me. Then he noticed that that was my beginning journey. I was beginning to connect to Chabad, and we had all conversation. So he was surprised. I'm learning Bnei Yisachar. He said, Admit. He says, you should know the Bnei Yisachar never went off the Rebbe's table. That's what he knew. I don't know why he knows that. And I just heard this Chanukah, an amazing thing, that the Lubavitcher Rebbe said one time, as a Bnei Yisachar, I have to verify this, that when they asked him about something, he says, Shteitim Bnei Yisachar. And he says, Bnei Yisachar is a mocker like Kizvei Arizal. In other words, it has the same value and the same significance like Kizvei Ari. That's how highly he felt of the Bnei Yisachar. Yisachar is it's very, 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 very powerful and very, 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 very powerful svarim. In any case, okay.
One day in the city of Dinev, this is already after the Bnei Yisachar was known already as a big Rebbe and a big tzaddik, a poor man arrived at Erev Shabbos, and he ended up being the guest of the mikveh yid, the yid that charged. Obviously, this was not the most prestigious lodging. Anyways, here he is, and no one was really paying much attention to this poor man. And Friday night, he came to the tish, to the holy tish, the holy table of the Bnei Yisachar, and he's all the way at the end there, sitting in the back. The Bnei Yisachar takes his shirayim, tzaddikim, they used to give over leftover foods and pass it to the people. Bnei Yisachar eats a little bit and sends the entire plate over to this poor man. And so it was with all the shirayim, the entire night of the tish, this is what happened. The next day, the same thing repeated itself. Came Shalosh Shudas, this poor man didn't come. He didn't arrive, he didn't come. So Bnei Yisachar sent his son, Reb Dovidl, who was later the Rebbe in Dinev, to go find him. He came, he went, and he got him, and he brought him. So the sons of the Bnei Yisachar were very, very, very wondered. Everybody was like, who's this Yid? It came Matzah Shabbos, it was their minhag to always go into their father and Matzah Shabbos to get, I don't know, bracha from him or to talk to their father. Matzah Shabbos, the sons would go in. This time when they came in, they realized that their father wasn't in the mood of talking. He was in a big rush. Chick chock. So, okay. And he wanted them out quickly. So Reb Dovidl wanted to stay very much because he figured that something's going to happen now. Something big is going to happen. So he wanted to stay, but he knew what to do. So he sat down, he was sitting there on the couch, and he pretended that he's sleeping. And the Sasra told everybody to leave, and he pretended he's sleeping. So his father came and started like pushing to wake him up. He can't wake him up. He's sleeping. Okay, sleeping, sleeping. Meanwhile, what happens? A few minutes later, the poor man arrives. He's coming into the Rebbe. As soon as he walks in, Reb Dovidl is peeking, checking out, make sure to see what's happening. And he sees the Bnei Yisachar literally lay down, spread himself on the floor, literally like he's bowing all the way down on the floor. And then he picks himself up and he said, "Nu, vusat zayin de tachlis. What's going to be the tachlis?" And the poor man says to him, "Well, I was sent to you, I think, and two other tzaddikim. I think Reb Shalom of Belz, and the third one is in the Sefer that I read the story. It's not known. I mean, he doesn't know, the one who records the story, who the third one was." He said, "Du bist great, you're ready. If the other two are as ready as you, vet zayn gut. It's going to be good." And then the poor man left. So Reb Dovidl was very excited about this. He told his brothers what he just saw. And so they ran, I don't know if till that night or the Sunday morning, they went to the house of the guy, the lodging where he was staying, and they wanted to, you know, see if he's still there, and they found that he left town. He wasn't there anymore. So they asked the person, the host, did he leave something? He said, "No, I think he took everything." They started looking and rummaging around, and they found a small little folder of ksavim, of writings. They were very excited. And they ran and they took these ksavim and they brought it to the ladies' section in the shul. They wanted to do it quietly. No one was there. They came, it was a Sunday morning. The women's section was empty. And they wanted to open up and start reading. The Dovidl knew that the person who came was Mamash Mashiach Tzidkenu. So they wanted to see the ksavim. And at that moment, the Bnei Yisachar came running. And he says, "Gaval, don't touch!" He sensed it, and he took the whole thing away from them. That was that. That was the story. So we don't know what else happened, but that was the mice. In any case, when the Bnei Yisachar was young and he was traveling to the Choyza from Lublin, one time on his way to the Choyza, he used to walk. And someone, a wagon, a wealthy man, came driving by, and he asked him, "Where you're heading?" He said, "To Lublin." He said, "Come, I'll give you a ride." So he hops onto the wagon, and he was also very hungry. And this Yid offers him some mezainis, some mekel bracha, some lachayim, a little bit, I don't think it was Jack Daniels, but whatever it was. And he gave him, so he felt indebted to him. And he said, he says, "You know what?" He says, "If you need help, if you're going to the Lublin, you're going to the Choyza, if you need help, I'll help you out." He's laughing to himself. He says, this poor man, a schlepper over here, well, how can he help me by the chayza? He didn't, you know. But when he got there, he wanted to go to the chayza, but the door was closed. They didn't let anybody in. So he was, and the time was passing. They still didn't let anybody in. So he was curious. So he peeked through the window, and he saw that this poor man that he gave a ride is sitting with the chayza, and they're talking. So he realized it's not a regular person. And then when he finally came in, this poor man was still sitting in the room. The guy he gave a ride. So he gives him a kvittel to the chayza. And the chayza looks. And he had the kvittel, he's asking a bracha for children. So the Chayza said, you're going to have children, but they're not. But they're going to die young, very young. So he said, and he says, Rebbe, whatever. He says, that's what, you're going to have children there. We know this week in the parasha it says, Isha shekebrachasai beira chayisam. Chassidus, it explains that a tzaddik that is mamshech bracha. What does it mean? When a tzaddik is mamshech bracha, he's. It's not like you're bringing something new. A tzaddik can see what's in your shayrish, in your makar, in your source. A tzaddik can actualize. A tzaddik can draw down from the source. You see it this week when you have Ephraim and Menashe. He put his right hand on Ephraim and his left hand on Menashe because he said Ephraim will be greater. So the question is asked, if his right hand is a stronger bracha, let him put his right hand on Menashe and Menashe will be greater. But he's giving the bracha. So if he'll give his right hand on Menashe, the answer is when a tzaddik is giving a bracha, he right away scans your soul. He sees where your neshama is from, what's in the shayrish neshama. The tzaddik is able to actualize and draw down what's there. So when he looked at this person, he said, and by the way, the Bnei Yisachar is the one who writes in two of his svarim, he writes about the Chayza from Lublin and how he read Kvitlach. He said, many times I saw him say, L'shem Yichud Kutcha B'richu Shchinte, before he was reading the Kvitl. And he said what he was really doing was, this is what he writes, what he was really doing was causing a yichud in the sources of where, on the source where the neshama comes from. Lamaila, maila, maila, up there where the neshama comes from. And therefore, by plugging in and tapping into the source way up there, he was able to see all the anafim mispardim, all the branches. He also writes something really amazing. He says the Chayza from Lublin on Chodesh Nisan, the first 12 days of Chodesh Nisan, it's the time of the Nasiim. Each one is a Nasi. So every day during that Nasi, he was able to see what was going to happen that year in the corresponding month of that Nasi. So the first Nasi was Nasi of Shevet Yehuda, corresponding to Nisan. So on that day when he would read the Nasi, he would see everything that's happening in Chodesh Nisan. The Chayza was able to see the whole year. And he writes that back at the year he passed away, the Chayza passed away, three of the greatest Rebbes in Poland, then passed away in 1 year because they all three actioned themselves on that they want to bring Mashiach. And one of them was Reb Mendel of Rimanov, the other one was Rabbi Yisrael, the Kuznetz Magid, and the third one was the Chayza from Lublin. The Chayza from Lublin passed away on Tisha B'Av. It's a crazy story about the Chayza's passing, but Be'ezus Hashem on the Malava Malka that we'll do for the Chayza from Lublin, we'll talk about it. But in any case, when the Chayza from Lublin that year, would say, why would happen? He wrote down only to Menachemov, and then he didn't write anything after Menachemov. I'm just trying to think, what was he writing? I don't think he said, but he stopped by Menachemov. Maybe he didn't say the Nasi further, I'm not exactly sure. But that was a sign that they knew that he wasn't going to pass Menachemov. He already sensed in Nisan what was going to happen. In any case, this Yid is now standing by the Chayza. And the Chayza says, your child, you can have a child, but the child is going to die. So the wealthy man sees the poor man sitting there and he gives a wink to him. Okay, you said you're going to help me? Help me out now. I need help. So the Bnei Yisachar says to the Chayza, maybe read the Kvitl another time. So the Chayza reads it a second time and he says the same thing. So Bnei Yisachar asked him to read it a third time. He said the same thing. So then he says, Rebbe, he says, no. He says, yes, can Stadavin, and he should have healthy children. And the Chayza lit up. He says, he says, you opened up for me a new shvil of how I can help this yid. With a bracha, he couldn't help him, but he can daven for him. Davening, in Chassidus, it's discussed that a bracha, your mamshech from the mukkar. Tefillah is to cause a new ratzain. It doesn't have to be in the mukkar. It's from a place that's not in the source. That's the idea of yehi ratzain. Let there be a new will. So, in a manner of davening, he was able to daven for him. One time, when the Bnei Yisachar walked into the Chayza from Lublin after a long journey, he didn't even get a chance to do anything, to settle to anything. He just came straight to the Rebbe. The Chayza said, he heard the Chayza saying as follows: anybody who's living in the generation of the Kuznetz Magid, Rabbi Yisrael of Kuznetz, and does not go to see this holy tzaddik, is not going to merit to see Moshiach. That was his statement. So the Bnei Yisachar immediately left, and he traveled to Koznitz. When he came to Koznitz, Koznitz HaMagid was very, very weak, and he would lay in a bed. And he had a lot of people in the room, and he tried to get in and see him. He couldn't see him. So he managed to push himself up, and he got like on high up, and he stepped up on like on a, something on the wall, on a shelf or something, the Bnei Yisachar, and he picked himself up, and he peeked down over everybody to see the Koznitz HaMagid. As the Koznitz HaMagid looks up, and he sees him, and he says, Yungiman, Beria Baal Makoni. It's a statement in the Gemara that with Riyah, just by seeing something, you can be Koina. He said, Yungiman, Beria, only with a vision, only with seeing, you already Koina, you needed to get what you needed to get from, as he meant, for my neshama, for my holiness. It's a there already. Anyways, this is the now. The Bnei Yisachar was a Rav. In addition to being a Rebbe, he was a Rav. He was a Poisek Halacha. And he was a Rav, actually, in 10 cities. 10 different places. He didn't, for a few of the places, someone asked him, like, why, what's going on with you? You can't hold on to your Rabbanis. He actually moved many, many places. He was in Dinev, and he was in a bunch of towns, I'll tell you a few of the towns, a place called Ribetage, and then and in a whole bunch of places you probably wouldn't know the towns anyways, but hold on over here. Towns mostly in Galicia, but then, and he had a lot of opposition. He didn't have an easy life. He had a lot of redifas. And one of the places when he was Rav in Dinev, because he was a very, very, very takaftig person, meaning he stood very strongly and he made strong takanas and he didn't let anybody mess and so on and so forth. What happened was that some people didn't like it, and they had an opposition. They were malshin on him. They slandered him to the government and so on and so forth. That he's making whatever the slander was. In the end, in Dinev, they chased him out of Dinev. What does it call it? They expelled him. They expelled him. They put him. You think these people had easy lives? He was put onto a garbage wagon, and so they drove him out of town. That's it. Then, Nebuch, all the people who did that, and all the that were involved, Nebuch didn't, things weren't good for them. But in any case, at a certain point, he was invited to become rabbi in Munkács, in Hungary. It was because the great Zidichoyver, Reb Tzvi Hersh of Zidichoyver, who was a huge, huge makubal, one of the great... By the way, you should know, just the Bnei Yisachar was one of the people who in his Svarim and in his writings uses far more Kabbalistic writings than many, many of the other Polish Rebbes. In general, you know, Chassidus Chabad is very much into learning Pnimius HaTorah, learning the secrets of the Torah, and so on and so forth. Those that were in Poland were of much, much, much less. They were Mitzamtzim and did not teach a lot. The Zidichoyver was one of the great Mikubalim, and he used to write a lot of. He was called Sar HaZoyar, the Sar. He was a good friend with the Bnei Yisachar. Bnei Yisachar actually wrote a Pirush on one of his Svarim. So he was the one who was Matzia. It's an amazing story. He suggested that the Bnei Yisachar should become rabbi in Munkács. His great-grandson and his grandson was the Rav, known as famous author, and his sefer is printed in Shulchan Aruch, called the Darkei Tshuva. This was the grandson of the Bnei Yisachar, and then the great-grandson was the Minchas Alazar, and they were Rabbanim, they were the Rabbanim in Munkács. It was because they inherited the Rabbanis of their great-grandfather, the Bnei Yisachar. So Reb Tzvi of Zidichoyev spoke very highly of him, and he said, the Chayze of Lublin said very great things on the Bnei Yisachar, and therefore he suggested they should take him as their rabbi. It's an interesting story. When he went to Munkács, he asked the Zidichoyver should come along with him. Now the Zidichoyver had a problem. Every time he would come to Hungary, something would happen to people in his family, and he knew that for whatever reason, the ministering angels, the spiritual powers of Hungary, are scared of him. They're scared of him. And therefore, every time he would come to the Hungarian area, something would happen to his family. So he told the Bnei Yisachar, he said, if you take it on your achrayas to protect me, I'll come with you. So that's what happened. Actually, he waited for him at a certain town. What was the name of the town? Vertsky. And he said, oh, till here I still feel Galiciana lift. I still here feel, and therefore I don't feel I'm in Hungary. I'm still okay. But as further than here, I'm scared to go. So he told the Yisachar to protect him. He said, you're okay. When they were coming in, the Zichover said to him, listen, if you're going to a new country, do you know the ministering angel of that country? Do you know the Sar Lamaila? He said, yeah, I know him pretty well. This is what he said. Ken him good. So he said, okay, then you're okay. When he came, and they were there for a few days, suddenly someone came running, a messenger came running to the Zidichover, telling him that emergency, his daughter back home fell ill, and she's deathly ill, and that he should come back immediately. So he got scared, and he was expecting something like this to happen. But Mamish, when he was in that state, a shliach comes to the Bnei Yisachar. It was very early in the morning, and he says to his to the Rechaver, are you ready to come daven with me? So he says, he's probably going to daven early because he knows already what's happening, and he's got me covered. So he sent the shliach back home, and he said, don't worry, he's got me covered. I'm okay. Anyways, the Bnei Yisachar was a munkach for 4 years. During that time, he made many, many takanas. Hungary was being strongly influenced by the maskilim, by the enlightenment. They were coming in and they were making a lot of problems. So he made a lot of very strong takanas. And some of the things that he did, and he wrote the certain svarim that are with his takanas that he made for the Hungarian Jews, for Munkács. And some of them, the people didn't like, especially one of the things that he started up with the Hungarian Jews was that he held that the stuffed geese, or something called gestopte gens, the Chassam Sofer was matter this thing. They would stuff geese. And the stuffing of the geese, the Chassam Sofer said it's kosher. But the Bnei Yisachar felt that it's impossible, that it doesn't become a treifa. And for many other reasons, he held that it's an issur d'oraisa to eat it. So he came out. Now, we all know that Hungary was the Chassam Sofer's territory. So when he came in and he started making differences, he evoked the wrath of the people. And in the end, he had to run away. He had to leave Munkács. He couldn't stay there. But here's a very, very interesting story. One of the things that happened while he was in Munkács was that the heads of the town, I'm sorry, the government, would be right if the Yidden would make different problems for the Jews. One of the things was they made a tax, crazy, think about the taxes. They made a tax on candles. Every time you light a candle, they knew Jews liked a lot of candles. So every time you light a candle, you have to pay a payment. So the poor people, when it came to Shabbos, they were promising that they were only lighting 2 candles. Usually people light for the whole mishpacha, like more, but they were promising only 2 candles. And they had this moiser, this snitcher, an informer that was going around and was causing a lot of problems, that these people are lying and so on and so forth. People were getting into trouble. So when this person came into shul, the Bnei Yisachar were so upset, and he met this yid, and the Bnei Yisachar gave him a slap. And when this person got very angry, he went back to the governor there, whoever, the mayor of the town. And he said, the rabbi over here slapped me because I'm informing, I'm doing what you want, whatever. So he had the Bnei Yisachar come to him. When the Bnei Yisachar came, he wasn't looking at him. The Gemara says, Asa l'istakel ba'adam rasha. It's forbidden to look into a wicked person. He wasn't looking at him. So he had a whole dialogue and a conversation with him, and he wasn't looking at him. He was getting upset. And he said to him, like, why don't you look at me? This, and then he just continued the conversation, fine. So then he got so angry, and he said to him, he says, I'm a second Haman. He said, I'm a second Haman. So the Bnei Yisachar said, well, the first one didn't do too well either. So this really, really got him angry. And later, when the people in later the Shoichtim in Munkács, Again, they were very upset because he ruined the business with the Gestapo Genz. It was a major meat, source of income for these people, and he held it was absolutely forbidden. So they had a court case against him, and it was decreed that they arrested him, and it was decreed that as punishment that he had to be flogged, that they were going to whip him. And so Bnei Yisachar was held in jail, and they were gonna do the flogging at a certain time. There was a sheikhet who lived not far from the courthouse, and he realized that this is not the right thing. And how can they take a tzaddik like him? And he knew he's a great man. And so somehow, I don't know, he lived mamish close by. He was able to go from his house, leap over from the roof into the place, and from inside, he managed. I don't know how he got him out, and he took his place. He took the flogging for him. He released the Bnei Yisachar. He took his place. Bnei Yisachar gave him a big bracha. He should have arichus yamim, live a long life. Anyways, at that time, the Bnei Yisachar left Munkach. And when he left, he cursed the various different, even the place that the place that he was in, the courthouse, that whole place. And actually, they say it became a teiloila. It'd never be rebuilt. And he did say that you're able to chase me out of here, but my children and my grandchildren, they you won't be able to chase. So the Taka, his grandchildren were Rabbanim in Munkach for many, many, many years. But here's an amazing story, just going to conclude before we sing the next Niggun. When he was one time in a town called... All right, what was the name of the town? Here we are. The name of the town is... He once spent Shabbos in a town called Velkach. I don't know where this is. It was Parshas Vayishlach. And the Bnei Yisachar was reading from the Sefer Torah, was the Baal Koyrei. And he read the mitzvah of not eating from the Gid Hanosha, from the sciatic nerve. And when he read it with a lot of aslivus, and he emphasized it very strong. There was a person in that town, his name was Yosef Torler. He was a son-in-law of the Rav. And he was a little bit ay-ay-ay. He was already a Bislanoifke character. He was already like a little bit of the... So when he saw the Rebbe over here laning it and making such an emphasis, that's chos, he laughed afterward. But in Aliyah, he gave his thing and he said as follows after the Aliyah. He said, it's a mazel that the Malach had tzachfachepet, that the Malach had only started up, only hit him in this gidanosha, in the sciatic nerve, where the meat, anyways, it's not much of to eat over there. Could you imagine if the Malach would have hit him in the ribs, then we wouldn't be allowed to eat ribs? That was his statement. So when the Bnei Yisachar heard that, the Bnei Yisachar said that this yid, he can tell in him that there was already stuff going on. He said, you should know that he said, I don't know if he told it to him directly, if he said it about him. He said, this yid is going to shmad himself. Not only is he going to shmad, which means he's going to, you know, leave his Judaism. He says he's going to shmad on Yom Kippur. That's what he said. If it's shmadin of Yom Kippur. All right. So this person got very upset. So he went to go to a friend of the Bnei Yisachar, one of the great Rebbes in Poland, known Reb Naftali of Ropshitz. When he came to Naftali of Ropshitz and he said, this is what the Dinover, the Tzvi Elimelech, said to me, that I'm going to shmad on Yom Kippur. So the Ropshitz, in his perfect style, said, Nu, azoyate gezukt. So he said, Nu mitzvah lishmoya divrei chachamim. He said, it's mitzvah l'shmoya, right? It's a mitzvah to listen to the wise. Anyways, so happened, Yom Kippur, this guy started getting horrible machshav zaris, and no matter what he tried, he couldn't push it out. And halfway through Yom Kippur, he was already made his decision that he is going to shmat. But he was not going to do it on Yom Kippur, because he said to him that he's going to do it on Yom Kippur. So barely, he waited it out, even though it was burning in him, till after Yom Kippur. Matzah Yom Kippur, he ran to the Galach, him and took his wife and his children, And and everybody was baptized, Matzah Yom Kippur. And then he was walking around and saying, Chamtsa Kishmat, but I didn't do it on Yom Kippur. The B'nai Yisrael was wrong. So B'nai Yisrael heard about it. The B'nai Yisrael said, no, Atzach Kishmat, that he's going to Shmat, I knew he was going to do. But that he's going to become an Am HaAretz as well, that I didn't realize. The Gemara says that for every Aveda, the thought doesn't count like an action. Besides Avodah Zarah. For Avodah Zarah, the thought itself is already an action. So therefore he did Shmat on Yom Kippur, because that's when he made his decision. What happened was, this Yosef became the top censor in Lvov of the Svarim. When, after the B'nai Yisrael passed away and they wanted to print the B'nai Yisrael Svarim, he was the inspector. And he saw who it is. He said, B'shum Oifenat. He says, he's the guy who caused the... He didn't want to let him print his Svarim. So the first print of B'nai Yisrael was printed without a daf ashar, without a shar blot. And it was didn't say who it is. It was just printed because they had to hide who the Sefer is. So when it was printed not... And then later they were able to print it, but this was the Maisa. Chaim, the son of I want to give a little bracha now through a little story. The son of Rebbe, of the B'nai Yisrael, once got very sick. His father came to visit him. His name was Reb David. His father came to visit him, and his father said that they should add a yud to his name. And they spelled his name David with a yud. Dalet Vav, yud Dalet. And he said, what's this Indian? And he got better when he added the yud. It says, the Gemara says that just now, those that were learning Daf HaYomi, at the beginning of Masechtas Brachos, the first six daf of Daf HaYomi I always learn on every cycle. That's as far as I get. But, so the Gemara, Kol HaShvi, and I have to get to the seventh blot. Any case, so it says over there that Rabbi Yochanan went to visit a person that was sick. I forgot already who it was. And he said to him, and the person, Rabbi Lazar, and he wasn't happy. He asked him, do you enjoy your Yisurim? Do you enjoy suffering? The Gemara is a sugi over there talking about Smechim b'Yisurim, those who enjoy the pains and suffering and whatever. They accept them joyfully. He asked him, do you accept it? He said, no, I don't want them. Lo hein v'lo yischaran. I don't want them and I don't want their reward. So Rabbi Yochanan said, give me your hand. Yoav Yoyodai, he gave him his hand. V'oikmei, and he picked him up. Rabbi Yochanan, Yoav Le Yodai. Rabbi Yochanan gave him his hand and he picked him up. So the B'nai Yisrael says, Yoav Le Yodai, giving his hand means he gave him a yud. Yodai, yud is a yodai, is a yud. He gave him a yud, so he put a yud into his name, into his son's name. V'oikmei, and he picked him up. B'nai Sas actually says that in those words, Yohev Le Yodei, there is a shame of Hashem. Yud Lamed Yud, the Rosh HaTevis, Yeli, Yud Lamed Yud. That's the shame for the Fu'a Shalema. And he says that's the reason why Yohev Le Yodei, he gave him his hand, V'oikmei, and he picked him up. So we're asking that tonight, we want that Yud, the Yud that the B'nai Sascher gave to his son, should be given to everyone that needs a Fu'a Shalema, should have a Fu'a Shalema. All those that need spiritual healing should have that yud, that pintle yud that's in the neshama, shine with all its light, with all of its glory. And the Jewish people that need to be picked up from the exile, Yoav Le Yodei, the ultimate yud, should drop into the Jewish people, should reveal itself within all of us, V'loikmei, and it should pick us all up out of the golos and into the geula, which we will dance. If anybody is not aware, the miracles of the Geula that are already happening in the world are stunning. It's unbelievable what's happening in the last couple of years. The changes we're seeing, the whole world is flipping over and it's out of control. Especially over the last few weeks, we see with the killing of the Soleimani and the riots that are erupting now in Iran. The last stand of darkness. This is the last klipa. Once they're done, fartik, it's over. We're holding at a time that's unbelievable. Yidden would know the emes. We would be dancing in the streets, besimcha, like we did over here. This dance would just go out and erupt all over the streets. We're holding in incredible times. The Eibusha should help that we should all just push it, push just that one last push, push it over the edge. Because we're really there. L'chaim al-Bracha, may we see already all the miracles happening. The great tzaddik, the Chayza, once met with the rest of the Talmidim, big, big Rebbeim, big Tzadikim, on Rebbe Lemelech's yard sites. in Lizensk, and all the great tzaddikim came to be there for Rabbi Lamelech's yahrzeit, Chaf Hei Adar. Amongst them was Rabbi Naftali of Ropshitz. He was a senior, the student of the Chayza from Lublin, a very good friend of the Bnei Yisachar, and there were other Tamidim there. Suddenly, one of the big tzaddikim of Poland came in, and which the Naftali of Ropshitz was not so fond of this particular derech of this tzaddik, even though he was a great person. And he was one of the Talmidim of the Yuda Kaddish of Pshischer, Reb Shloime Leib of Lentsche, that was his name. Fascinating tzaddik on his own. We should have him alav amalk on him, Bezos Hashem. But in any case, when he came in, the Naftali of Ropshitz, who was the senior student of the Chayza from Lublin, walked out. And as he left, most of the other Talmidim of the Chayza and Talmidim of Rav Melo all left. So no one was there. So who was left? This tzaddik who came in. And the Bnei Yisachar didn't leave. He remained. The next day, the one who orchestrated this Suda made another Suda. And again, he had the Talmidim over there. This time, he didn't invite that fellow. The Bnei Yisachar was there. So the Naftali of Ropshitz asked the Bnei Yisachar to say Torah. He gave him, told him to say Torah. So he says, by the Akedas Yitzchak, it says that the Malach, that the Eibishter tells Avram Avinu to take Yitzchak, kachna is bincha, take Yitzchak.
I don't understand.
See, doesn't understand. And for Shteytnish, we have to start all over again. All right, so what happened over here? So he asked him, I'm trying to figure out why I got that message that I don't understand. What do I have to do now? Anyways, here's the story. So he said, the Eibishter said to Avram Avinu, kachna is bincha, take your son for the Akedah. And then later, when the Eibishter tells Avram Avinu to stop the Akedah, it says, Vayikra lo malach Hashem, a malach said, stop. So he said, I don't understand. How come in the beginning it's the Eibishter himself telling him? Hashem himself is telling him, kach tazbin. When he's telling him to stop the Akedah, Vayikra lo malach Hashem, a malach asked. This is the Bnei Yisachar's question. The malach said to stop. So the Bnei Yisachar said, Zetzachos, you see from here, to go shecht another yid, you can't listen to even a malach. The only one you can listen to is the Eibishter said, the Eibishter said. But chas v'shalom, but anybody else tells you to shecht another yid, you don't do it. So he's basically saying that even though he was saying, you know, yesterday, you know, everybody walked out, I didn't go, and I've told you of Ropshitz, a malach elakim, but this, you only listen to the Eibishter. Then, there was another time later that the Rebbe Tali of Ropshitz was demanding of the Bnei Yisachar to join him in his fight against this Rebbe. He felt that the future of Chassidus was on the line. Rebbe Tali Ropshitz felt that the future of Chassidus was on the line because he felt that this derech was not good for the Jewish people. So, and he didn't want to join him. The Bnei Yisachar did not want to join him. So the Naftali of Ropshitz was then holding a cup in his hand. And he said, Weißt du denn nicht, don't you know, as if me and them and Aros the Chayas Fenepes, that if we take the life, something, everything exists in the world that has divine energy that keeps it alive. He says, Weißt du denn nicht, that when we take out the Chayas from something, the Chios, the life of it, it has no life. And as he was saying it, the cup that was in his hand just disintegrated, literally disintegrated. The way I heard the story wasn't that it's, I read the story that it disintegrated, like collapsed, like became just like earth. Originally, when I heard the story many years ago, I don't remember even from who, is that literally it disappeared. It just had no metzias. He turned something back into ayin, which is, the question on that is, we know that the Eibishter creates yesh me'ayin, and it says that the nes, To make from yesh back ayin is even a bigger thing than making meyesh ayin. So to know if it became mamish nothing, it went to nothingness, or it came back, or I don't know. But this is the story. He meant to say that if we're pulling out of this tzaddik or whatever, then you know this is what we need to do. This is the right thing. And so he told them like this, when the Eibishter revealed, so the answer to the Bnei Yisachar, when the Eibishter revealed himself to Moshe Rabbeinu for the first time, he told him, Shal Na'alecha ma'al raglecha. Take your shoes off your feet. He says, what did it mean when he told him, take your shoes off your feet? Shoe, he says, now is Rosh HaTevis. The Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, be very careful with the Chachamim. Be careful with the Tzadikim. Why? Sheni Shichason, their bite, the Shichas Shul, is the bite of a fox. The Akitzason, their sting is Akitzas Akrov, is the sting of a scorpion. The Lechishason, and their spell or their Lechisha, what they say with their mouth. Lechishas, what does it say? Incantation is what? Of a Saraf. No, not of a Saraf. Nachash is a Lechisha of a Nachash. Of a serpent. So be careful with. So he says that the Eberster told Moshe Rabbeinu, if you want to be the leader of the Jewish people, make sure not to use your sting, your shal na'alecha, take off your na'al. Na'al is nun, ayin, lamed, representing these three powerful things that tzaddikim have, that if you mess with them, you can get hurt. The Eberster told Moshe Rabbeinu, this, remove that. And the Rav Shitzer really liked what he said. He said, the Yungaman halt kop. He says the Bnei Yisrael said it to the Rav Shitzer when the Rav Shitzer was demanding of him. It's interesting that when the Rav Shitzer passed away, the Rav Shitzer always said, he passed once the city of Landshut. He passed that city and he said, and he drew a pass by, he said, Ich schmeck von Tchias HaMesim. I smell the scent of Tchias HaMesim, of the resurrection. So he wanted to be buried in Landshut. So what he did was, when he felt his time was up, he came to Landshut. He's buried taka there. The Rav Shitzer is buried in a city in Galitza called Landshut. When he came there to die in Kummendarten. And then he was there, he was geisessing for 3 days. Everybody was with him. It was a long passing. The Bnei Yisachar at that time was in Munkach, as I said earlier. He sensed it all the way from Munkach. He came running. And he came in. And when he came into his... He saw the Rav Shitzer as a good friend, but also a shtickle as a Rebbe. So he came in and he told everybody that should start saying Nishmas. And when they started saying Nishmas, the Rav Shitzer got very, very like, gave a big, big smile, like, oh, that's what I've been waiting for. They all said Nishmas together, and as soon as they got to the end of Nishmas, Parcha Nishmasai, that's when the Rav Shitzer passed away, when the Bnei Yisachar was there at the passing. But here's a beautiful story. The holy Bnei Yisachar Fra used to go around Pesach by night before his Seder. He would go around to the simple Yidden to try to see how the simple Yidden make their Siddurim. And one time as he was going from house to house, he came to a house and he saw there was a simple Yid sitting there making his Seder. And he was holding by the part where he's describing, learning, reading the Haggadah about the Arba Bonim, the four sons in the Haggadah. So it says over there, Keneged Arba Bonim Dibre Torah, the Torah speaks about four sons. Echad Rasha, Echad Chacham, one is a Chacham, one is a Rasha, one is a wicked, one is a Tam, one is a simple one. Echad She'eni Yedei Elish. This simple Yid was reading it, and so he knew, what do you do when you say Echad? He went, Echad Chacham, Echad Rasha. See, he was doing the Echad that you do by Kriya Shema, because he's used to when you're saying Echad, you put your hands on your eyes, you shuckle, and you say a long echad. He's a very, very simple Jew, didn't know much. He was doing this echad. And the Bnei Yisachar was like, yeah, he was beaming. He said, Kik der yid et genum in dar bor bonim, in ike machten ze krishma. He took the four sons and he made a krishma out of the four sons. And then the Bnei Yisachar said, that's hinted to later. It says that by the story of Maaseh Bereb Eliezer, they came, the four rabbis were sitting in Bnei Barak, and they came and they giyash zman, Kriya Shema Shal Shachris. The time of Kriya Shema. That's the Echad. But even deeper than that, he said Shachris is Rosh HaTevis. Chacham, Rosha, Tam, She'eno Yodea. These are the four Bonim that are in Giyazman Kriya Shema Shal Shachris. The Bnei Yisachar was in the spirit of the Tzadikim of the Baal Shem Tov, was always a very big Malam Tzchus on Yidden. He used to make sure that on Sukkis, if Sukkis would come out on Sunday, I'm sorry, on Monday, Sunday night, Sukkis can come out on Sunday night, he always made sure to have non-Jews, Gentiles, make his sukkah. Now, Sunday is a day that everybody's off, but he would look to find people that would come work for him on Sunday. He would promise them, he would give them, every worker would get 2 bottles of vodka, and I guess he paid them as well, but the 2 bottles of vodka, that was enough to get every time he would have workers on Sunday. And then when he would walk into his sukkah, he would kiss the floor and the walls. He was always very excited about the sukkah. And then he would say to Baruch Shalom Eibush, to take a look at these guys, he says, they don't work on Sunday, but this is their holy day. He says, but for 2 bottles of vodka, I'll get any of them to come work. And by Yidden, I couldn't get a Jew, no matter what I would give him, to, you know, not to work. That was his limud schus for Yidden on Sukkos. L'chaim. Let me share with you the Ptira of the Holy Bnei Yisachar. It happened in Chodesh Tevis. As he was nearing, he was very young. He was only 58 years old. He was actually a very healthy person. There was nothing wrong with him. But from already after the Shoshana, he started giving signs that he knew that his impending passing is coming. And he asked one of his students, please daven for me. I should have longer years. I should have longer years. I'll make you into Chvod Gebem. Oh, I wanted to share something really special. The Bnei Yisachar, before I get this passing, the Bnei Yisachar had a moya charif. He had an incredible sharp mind, an unbelievable mind. He was one of the few people that literally had almost like 2 minds. They can do 2 things at the same time. Mamish. He had such a brain. So when he would see people would come for kvitlach, to see him for brachas, at the very time he would be writing Chiddushei Torah. So he was listening to people, and he was writing Chiddushei Torah. Ad kedei kach, that the women that would come for brachas thought that he's writing what they're telling him and all the things. And they said, such a Rebbe there never was. This is the first time they see a Rebbe who writes down everything that everybody speaks to him, all the things. One time, one of the women came, she asked him about something, and he said, well, what is it? She said, don't worry, you wrote it down already last time when I was there. The Charupke Shirim, look it up. I told you already all the details from last time. After he passed away, his son was Rebbe. So this lady comes, and she says to him, you're not like your father. He said, that I know. He says, but why do you say so? She says, because you don't write down all the things. He says, but your father would write down and he would send it right away in Himalayan. She felt that every time he wrote, he would immediately send it up to Shamayim. But you... Once a lady complained, she said, how come I'm not even worthy that you should listen to me? Because he was mamish writing. She knew that he's writing something else. So he said, not only can I tell you, not only did I hear you, but I can tell you what you spoke to me 10 years ago and what I answered you and so on and so forth. So Moyach like this, he can do 2 things at one time. You can wrote big Chiddushei Torah and at the same time that he would have a conversation. Mamash like, you see that by the Rebbe too, like a way of being able to like, when he was young, at times he didn't have Svarim, he needed Svarim. He would go to the soif, to the guy, the Moichas Svarim. He didn't have money to buy. He would borrow a sefer. He would take it for the night. He would literally scan it from cover to cover. We'd give it back in the morning. That was it. That's all he needed. He had it like literally scanned in his brain. That's where it was. An incredible mind. Rabbi Shua of Bells, or Rabbi Sachadav of Bells, said about Svarim. He was machaber like 20, 30 different svarim. It's a lot, like a different subjects. Well, a lot of his stuff got lost, but even from what was printed, it was a whole mitzvahs, Kabbalah, Nigla, this, Shas, on Navi, on everything. I mean, the guy wrote. So he said upon him that because he was right at the beginning of the Haskalah and they were printing a lot of books, so he was the Le'umazah to print svarim the Kedusha,
that would be the lo'umazeh of the books of the Haskalah that were coming out to counter these enlightened books that were, or what they called enlightenment, that was being produced at that time. Anyways, the Bnei Yisrael felt that his time was coming. His son invited him. His son had a baby, and his son invited him. It was the beginning of Chodesh Tevis. He said, "Please come to the bris." And he says, "And if you, for whatever reason, you can't come to the bris," he invited his father to come. "Please at least send me what you the name should be." So he told him, "I can't come." And regarding the name, he says, "No, that you'll know already." His father was perfectly well. Then he got, right on Chodesh Tevis, he got sick with typhus. And he got very ill. When it came time for his petita, he had people in the room. He told everybody, he was sitting on the couch and he was talking things and they didn't understand. So first they thought that he was delirious and just speaking things. Then he demanded everybody should leave. Everybody should leave. So his son, Reb David, didn't want to leave. He hid. But he was able to pick up that someone is still in the room. And he said, "I sent someone here," made sure that he would leave. Everybody was outside. And he was alone. They were saying Tehillim, they were very scared. And he was mamash alone in his room. And then a yid comes running, a yid arrives, a merchant. This merchant of Bnei Sascha had told him to invest all his money in buying wool. He bought a massive amount of wool, and wool wasn't doing well. And here the Bnei Sascha is holding by passing away, and he's got a story with the wool, and he doesn't want to hear of nothing. He comes there, he says, "The Rebbe Prav told me with the wool, I need, every time I do business, I ask the Rebbe, now I'm here with all the wool, what should I do?" They told him, "It's not a good time to go in now, the Rebbe's sick." "No, he's passing, he's very sick, he can't go." "No, b'shem oifen." And the Bnei Sascha heard from his room that the commotion, he said, "Let the guy come in." The person came in, and the Bnei Sascha said, "Hold on to the wool until Erev Sukkos." This is in Tevis. That's what the person actually did. He held on to the wool till Erev Sukkos. Prices skyrocketed at that time for whatever reason. He sold it, he made a killing, he was very, very wealthy. In any case, this was the bracha that he gave for this yid. And then they just were peeking in a while later, and they saw that he was nostalgic. No one was by his petita. He was sick mamish just a few days. Oh, he did say a few weeks before, he kept on quoting what Chazal say, that tzaddikim who write Divrei Torah, he says, they're sifsoisav doivavois bekever. Their lips are doivav, are always speaking in the kever when you say over from their Divrei Torah. So he pointed to his lips and he said, "Oi, dia lippen veln zain sifsoisav doivavois bekever." One of the most quoted people, and especially like the Bnei Yisrael, is quoted nonstop, right, all over the world. Say svarim, and he said that before his passing. L'chaim yidden, we should have only brachas mitala gutazachin, and we should merit already Mashiach tzedkenu tonight. L'chaim.